welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today, we're going to be speaking with Rachel Stouvet of Anthem. She's currently the Senior Director of Data Science and Artificial Intelligence at Anthem here in Atlanta. She originally moved to Atlanta back in 2015 for a position with NICE Nexidia. And then she was Director of Data Program Management at healthcare startup Advantum Health just prior to joining Anthem 2 years ago. She spent a lot of years up in Detroit. Prior to coming to here, she began her career, in fact, in county government up in Detroit. Then she shifted to a private sector role with Manufacturer Champion Enterprises. From there, she had several years with General Electric before finishing her time up north with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. Rachel has a bachelor's in Management Information Systems from Oakland University and a master's in Business Leadership Administration from Central Michigan University. And with that, let's welcome Rachel to the show. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
So I always like to start by asking people, what initially brought you into the world of analytics and data science? Because it's obviously not the most common career out there, even as it's growing strongly today.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. When I actually started my career, it was not called analytics or data science. It was really just database development or Excel or Access. But what really attracted me to it were a couple things. A lot of it was during kind of that technology boom in the late 90s, where there was a lot of innovation, a lot of advancement in technology, and just a lot of room to really start being really creative with a lot of the new technologies. And so I really enjoyed being able to be creative as leveraging technology, but with just a really fast pace of change, which really just attracted my personality. And then on the analytics side, one of the things I actually found that was quite different than some other technical fields was the ability to really work with business people and leverage people's skills and really apply technology and bring technology to a larger audience.
You know, you make a good point there that I don't think a lot of folks think about around analytics being a technical field where you not only get to, but actually have to interact with business and non-technical people, because there are a lot of other technical fields. If you think about it, if you're a networking person, what you do impacts those people very heavily, but you're probably not typically going to actually get to interact with them. And even, unless you're on the design side of software, if you're a software developer, a lot of times, you know, you're developing the code, there's somebody testing it, but not as much chance for interaction. That's an angle I haven't heard raised as often. And I thought that's a good one. So you've ended up spending the most time in your career, although you've been in a couple industries, you've definitely spent the most in the healthcare industry, and that's where you are presently today. So what got you into healthcare? What drew you there and what's kept you there?
Yeah, I like the healthcare field because for a couple reasons. One, I think historically healthcare tends to be a little bit behind in technology. So there's a lot of runway, a lot of white space to really innovate. And that's allows a lot of different projects, a lot of different career opportunities. So that I think is really attractive about healthcare. But also there's a really altruistic aspect of it, where I can go and do my job every day and know that I'm making an impact on someone's healthcare. So maybe it's somebody that gets nutrition that they need or gets care in a hospital or more efficient running of our ER systems and response systems. So for me, it's a way that I can not only enjoy what I do from a technology perspective, but feel like I'm really making an impact in my community as well as just the well-being and lives of people around me.
And, you know, as you talk about the analytics to help those people in the community, one of the challenges I'm sure that you face in healthcare is so heavily regulated that there are a lot of limits in terms of how you can apply data and analytics in that industry. So what kind of challenges do the regulations cause in healthcare that might be, you know, unique to healthcare or other industries that are similarly regulated?
Right. Yeah, the regulation, there's obviously a lot around privacy. So especially from a data perspective. And so privacy has been really a long-standing issue where we have to make sure that we're protecting the data and that only people that have the need to see certain things see it. There's a lot of extra layers to protect from malicious attacks or inadvertent attacks, right? If you went to the doctor, you would not want your information just out or given to somebody else, even if it was on purpose or by accident. So there's a lot around privacy. A lot of also what is starting to become in the industry that I think is important, especially for people considering careers, is really explainability. And especially around analytics and data science is this concept of can we explain what our analytics are doing in our data science models? And do we have that kind of transparency where we understand the decisions? And this is a big, it's not just healthcare, that's also very much in law enforcement, social justice, where we're starting to see a lot more attention into the field, and rightfully so. So just having more transparency with what we're doing.
Yeah. So I know one interesting thing to me about healthcare is that while there are those challenges, there have been some great strides made in recent times. So whether your company or just the industry in general, right, what are some of the coolest advances you've seen in analytics as it's being applied in healthcare in recent time?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. I think a couple wearables are a really exciting area for the industry right now. And I think that we're seeing more and more interest in wearables. So your smartwatch, sensors, these rings now that you can wear, rings on your finger. So wearables, I think, are bringing technology to people that wouldn't have normally had access, where now if I wear a smartwatch and I can monitor my heart rate, I may not have had access to that before. Where I can monitor our blood pressure, or stress levels in sleeping as well. And so wearables, and when we combine that with analytics and the power that we can really start putting healthcare knowledge into people's hands, and then in the future, use that to predict things. So predict chronic conditions or predict episodic attacks. I think that's a really exciting area for the industry and a really exciting way that we can truly leverage data and technology to bring it to people that wouldn't normally have access to that.
So I'm familiar with wearables like the fitness bands and such. I wear one of those. What do these rings do? I don't think I've seen a wearable ring. What is it measuring?
Oh gosh, yeah. There's a couple different brands out there, so I won't solicit one in particular. But there are rings that you wear, like a wedding ring or a jewelry ring, and they range from very casual to, you know, some of them look really much like a jewelry piece, and they'll track heart rate, stress level, blood oxygen level. So it's similar to a watch. But it's another kind of piece of design jewelry. And it's, I personally think it's a little less intrusive than a watch sometimes.
Yeah, I can see. I guess if the electronics have skinny down enough, you can fit it in a ring. That's a lot less obvious than this, you know, the big thing on your wrist. So,
right.
One thing in your background that definitely is not typical is that you, as one of your, you know, side activities, you're an angel investor. So I guess there's really two questions I have there. Like, what does that mean in practice, and how did you get into that? Because it's something that you hear the term a lot, and I don't think many people would know exactly what that typically means, though.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, I'm so glad you asked about that, because I absolutely love doing it. I'm a member of a group called Golden Seeds, and we're a national group of angel investors that focus on female-led early-stage startups. And an angel investor is individual investor that typically will kind of pool with other individual investors to make investments in organizations that are typically early stage. So they might be prior to needing, say, a big, huge funding round, maybe through a private equity or even IPO. So we're all individual people investing our own money. We decide what we want to invest and where, so we have that control. And I got into it for a couple reasons. I actually really have a big interest in entrepreneurship, especially here in Atlanta, where we have one of the most amazing cities and states for business and technology innovation in the country. And I think a lot of people think New York, California, but when you actually look at the companies, the tech companies and the investments here in Georgia, we're in the top of list of the country. We have some amazing startup incubators here, and there's a lot of technology that's here that's really kind of unrecognized and sometimes untapped. And for me, it's not only an interest area in entrepreneurship, but also furthering the metro Atlanta area and the state of Georgia in all of our technology and innovation. So I absolutely love it. I get to meet with a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of investors, and really sit and understand the trends in the industry. And I think too, really gaps of there's a problem in a community or a society, and entrepreneurs come in and they innovate to fill those gaps. And that's really exciting to be part of that.
That was a good advertisement for Atlanta there. I like that.
Well, I think we're underrated. Yeah. Sometimes when you sit and it's not an area that probably typically comes up when people think technology, but when you actually sit and look at all of the technology presence that we have here, we're kind of this unassuming area that we have a lot.
There's no doubt it is interesting. There's so many startups. When I think about the people I know that are working for various startups in various stages, and many of them getting some pretty decent funding to help them along the way too. But it is, you're right, we don't get the recognition. We're under the radar, which has, I suppose it has some benefits, but it also has some negatives. So hopefully we'll get ourselves out there a little more as a city and a region here over the coming years. So you're one of the people that seems to find more things to do than there could possibly be time. So the other thing I've noticed with you is how much you seem to get into volunteering as well, which I suppose you could say that, you know, angel investing is a variation of that, but then volunteering is a whole other thing. So how do you find the time to do that volunteering? And then from your perspective, what is it that makes it worth forcing that into what has to be already a pretty tight schedule?
Yeah. That's a great question. I'm not sure I've ever been asked that question directly. With the volunteering, I think for me, how I fit it in is I look at areas that I have interests and where I feel that I can offer something that's unique to me. I think that's really important with volunteering, is to sit and say, well, where can I give my special talents and my special time? And so that's where I really look for organizations that I feel I can make the most benefit. And I think being real about it has also been really helpful for me, where being real not only to myself, but the organization of what can I commit and what can I bring? Kind of that don't overpromise, because then it just doesn't really work out. And that for me has created really fulfilling relationships, really fulfilling volunteering without the stress of feeling like I've overcommitted or even breaking commitments. So I think that that has been really helpful to really sit and say, where can I focus? And then where can I be most effective?
So if I could put a pragmatic interpretation of what you've kind of said, because this could be really good for folks who wish they had time to volunteer. I think what I heard you say is, as long as you let them know what you can do, they'll be fine with that. Because I'm sure there's very few volunteer organizations that have too many volunteers, right? It seems like everybody always needs some. So if someone said, I can give you 2 hours, you know, every other weekend on average, as long as they know that, and if they have something that fits, they'd be thrilled to have you. People shouldn't feel like if they can't give 10 hours a week, then they shouldn't even make the call. Is that one way to interpret what you said?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is what makes a really good volunteer experience on both sides, where the organization can plan around that. But then for me or for whoever that person, you're still being able to give your talents. So absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I'll give you one example from my past that when I think about it, technically I get paid, but it was trivial. I refereed soccer after I quit playing for a while. And then when I had my son, I told the referee coordinator, I said, look, I'm traveling a lot. I've got this baby at home. So I could do a game between like 1:30 and 3:30 when it's his afternoon nap time on Saturdays or Sunday. And that's pretty much it. And I figured he'd say that's crazy because we can't work that in. But, you know, they were so desperate for referees that he's like, OK, I'll find you a game in that time range. And let me continue to do that for, you know, another year or two beyond what I otherwise would have if I had stuck to the assumption that you had to do 2 or 3 game sets or else, you know, you couldn't be of value. So I, you know, that was one where I learned it's a good thing to ask and see, because in that case, if I hadn't asked, we both would have lost because I wouldn't have got a chance to continue to contribute and they would have not had anybody cover those games I covered. So.
Oh yeah. That's a great example. That's a great story.
How fun. Yeah. So, you know, as you look back then, you've done a variety of roles, variety of industries. What's a trait of yours that you think has really contributed to you being able to be successful over the years and now, you know, end up at a fairly high level role at a very large and well-respected company?
Yeah, I think that for me, I've found being able to understand the fundamental concepts of data and how it can solve business problems and make businesses better and keeping it at that fundamental level has allowed me to apply those concepts across industries. So a lot of industries will have different nuances, but there's a lot of core problems that are still the same, or a lot of core usages for data. And so being able to understand that and break problems down into that base level has allowed me to apply that across a lot of different industries. And in conjunction with that, one of the things that I have found that has been most critical that I think sometimes gets overlooked is the ability to really storytell and relate to business people. Analytics sometimes can be really esoteric and it can be hard to understand, or I always kind of laugh because there's a lot of pop culture knowledge about machine learning and analytics, and people see these movies with cyborgs and predictive crime and all of this, and it's not exactly like that in real life. So being able to sit and explain data and what it means and how it can apply and how it works in very simplistic business terms has allowed me to really be successful in the implementations. And one of the things that I always tell my team and people that I mentor is you can build the best algorithm or the best database or the best insight, but if people don't understand it and they don't understand how to actually use it, it really doesn't matter how good that algorithm is or that database.
100%. I totally agree with you. And it, what's interesting to me, it's shocking how I think that either the not just the general population, but even the general population of data scientists, particularly those who are really at the practitioner level, don't necessarily understand fully the importance of what you just said. But as you get to people that are in senior leadership roles, they almost universally will say something along the lines of what you said. So I think there's a little bit of a correlation there. So people who doubt or question what you just said, look up your management chains, and the higher you go, the more you're going to see that everything you just said is probably part of the traits that you associate with them. So if you want to get there, hop on it, right?
Agreed.
So obviously working at a university, we deal with, young folks out of high school getting their bachelor's all the way up through, you know, mid-career people getting a master's or a PhD. As you think specifically about some of the students that are young and getting maybe their first job, whether with a bachelor's, master's, PhD, what's a piece of advice you'd have to them as to what they ought to be thinking about as they're looking for their first job in data science and as they attempt to build a career?
Yeah, I think that the thing to remember, kind of my advice, is that think about the different experiences or skills that people have had along the way and how that would apply. So for example, I've had people that don't have a lot of experience in, say, technical analytics, but they've had a lot of experience in leading projects at school or being organized or bringing a team together, or in their job, if it's kind of a part-time job of, can you problem solve? Is there customer service? Do you have listening skills? Can you apply that cross-functionally? So do you have technical skills? Do you have people skills? Writing skills are really important, especially with the kind of remote environment that we're in now, being able to communicate via email or text or chat or phone outside of that kind of in-person interaction is really critical. So I think my biggest advice really for people that are trying to enter the field is take a look at the whole gamut of your experience and look at the actual skills that could be applied to a job and not just focus on a technical certification or a technical project, but really all of the different experiences that somebody's had that would be valuable to an employer.
Some good advice. And that's kind of focusing on the present. We spent a lot of this discussion on your past. Let's just flip it before we wrap up here and look to the future. What are one or two of the trends that you think are going to be most impactful and most prevalent in the, let's say, 2 to 3 years out from now?
Yeah, definitely wearables. There's a lot with the startup community, a lot in healthcare, really looking at wearables and those kind of sensors and technology. So I think that's going to be a big trend. And I also see a big trend in analytics of really that kind of tell me the decision that I need to make. So we're kind of exiting the dashboard kind of era where it was all dashboard and visuals into, I don't want to dig into my data. I just need to know the answer. So that's going to be a lot more in the predictive area, in natural language processing, and really kind of getting away from user self-service into just telling user what the different decisions are, what the impact would be if decision A was made versus decision B.
Well, that'll be cool if we can get all the way there where the analytics is basically just a automated recommendation system of sorts where you don't have to do much except take the answer.
Yeah. Well, I think that might be a little bit more than 2 years out, but it's definitely, I see that as a trend shift.
We're definitely heading that way. When you look at all the automation that's happening and with the, you know, the processing power, the flexibility of the cloud that's evolved here so rapidly, no doubt that it's almost unimaginable, I'm guessing to us today, what we might have in 10 years, both from an analytics perspective, even just a general technology perspective. I think 10 years ago, we had our very first version iPhones, more or less, that kind of barely did the email and had a few basic apps. And now look at where we are in 10 years, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Now I'm thinking of all the technology as cell phones that have changed, even video conferencing, yeah. Right? 10 years ago was very different. So yeah. Yeah. And I think also, you know, it kind of comes, I think that's where COVID has been really interesting in the sense that I think it's really increased the pace of this type of prediction and personalization. Where this fact that we are more spread out, but we still have that innate human need to feel special and connected and unique. And that's where analytics, I think, has really accelerated because of COVID in personalization and prediction. And I think that that's creates a really good opportunity where we're COVID has been a good thing for this industry.
That's a good spot to end on there. I appreciate your time very much today. I know you're busy and I'm sure the audience got some great insights from you. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.